Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm Zach, your host, and this podcast is going through every episode of Smallville, the seminal television show about young Clark Kent as he becomes Superman. I'm once again joined by my friend Nick Mendoza. What's up, Nick?
Not much, Zach.
Nick Ryan King Mendoza, as I learned in our last episode together. Nick is responsible for our awesome artwork, so thank you so much for that, Nick.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad that it's being put to use. Man, I am really enjoying rewatching these episodes. Like, you don't understand. It's actually fun.
So have you been watching every episode or just the ones that you're on? Or how have you been going about rewatching Smallville?
Just the ones that I've been on. But I've also, whenever I'm listening to the podcast itself, I will go to YouTube and just pull up the specific scenes that we're talking about. Yeah, the clips. It's like, oh, yeah, okay. Like when you said how the X-ray vision was working, it's like, you know what? I don't remember how that looked exactly, and I just went on YouTube. It was like, oh, okay, when Clark gets his X-ray vision. It's like, oh, okay.
Yes, now, Smallville might not be streaming anywhere, but there are many clips of it across the internet on YouTube or other such means. So,
yeah.
Well, cool. So we'll go ahead and jump into it then. We're talking about Cool this week.
Wait. We're not talking about Fuller House this week?
No, we're not talking about Fuller House. We're not talking about the Oscars, okay? We're not talking about... Did you watch the Oscars?
I did not watch the Oscars, but I did hear that my actor finally won. So.
Yeah, I have a friend who has an Oscar party every year, and year he decided to have everybody dress up, so it was very formal, fun. You know, just a fun excuse to dress up and watch the Oscars together and really just talk movies and stuff like that. And we always guess who is going to win in each category, and we fill out sheets and all that. And he always wins because he's a movie-phile. And him and his brother are always on top of things. So I came in fourth in my predictions. I got 9 correct. I believe they got 18 and 17 correct, respectively. Somebody else got 11 along the way. But it's fun. You know, the Oscars, do they matter? No. Having an Oscar, having an Academy Award, does not mean your film is necessarily better than other films. Because, there's a lot of snubs this year, like Ex Machina. Although it did win for Best Special Effects, which was surprising. Yes. I'm glad it got some representation. Creed, the only thing it got nominated for was a supporting actor in Balboa and Sylvester Stallone. I think Michael B. Jordan might have deserved a nomination. I definitely think Ryan Coogler, the director of Creed, deserved a nomination because just incredible. Did you see Creed?
I have not. It's actually on my list of movies.
Definitely need to see it, man.
I have a list of Blu-rays to purchase when they release. And after you guys talked about it, before, I did make note.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. And, it's in Leonardo DiCaprio, sure, he won an Oscar, but did he deserve it for this performance? I don't really think so, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, I had that same revelation this morning. I had a feeling he was going to win because of, who he was up against. But the fact is, that's not that as exciting. It's more exciting when he's up against somebody that you're not too sure if he might win. And I haven't seen Revenant yet. That's also on my list to do. But all his other movies, I feel like he's deserved it every single time. With this one, yes, frankly, he does deserve it. But I don't know. The hype is...
I'll tell you what, man. I think his best performance was in Django Unchained.
Yes.
And he wasn't even nominated. Christoph Waltz was nominated and won instead for playing the same part he did in Inglourious Basterds, more or less. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, he's a great actor, but he just did the same thing again. And anyway, this is always hold on to Oscars, is this podcast. But, Oscars were, we're recording this on Monday. Oscars were last night. So it's fresh on our minds.
Fresh. And, yeah, it was the fresh episode.
It's the fresh Oscars. But anyway, enough about that. I don't think anyone ever involved with Smallville. Actually, I take that back.
I was actually about to ask that question. I had a segue for this.
Amy Adams has been nominated for Academy Awards, I believe, at least twice. Outside of that, though, I don't think anyone involved with Smallville has ever been nominated for an Academy Award.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even Mike Rosenbaum?
No, Kicking It Old School was never nominated for anything.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and jump into it. Cool.
What's going on? I agree to a cappuccino. If you think I'm skinny dipping with you, try again, buddy.
I'm sorry, Chloe. I don't have a choice.
What happened to you?
I can't stay warm.
Why don't you just sit by a fire?
because I only get a quick fix. Body heat lasts longer.
Cool is the fifth episode of Smallville's first season. It aired on November 13th, 2001, was written by Michael Green, and directed by James A. Contner. So, Nick, episode opens with a high school party. You know, we were in high school. Did you ever go to a party like this?
I don't think I've ever been to a party that was outside and next to a lake.
Crater Lake, which makes its first appearance on Smallville. It has a few more appearances. Now, with a name like Crater Lake, you assume that it was created from the meteor shower, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, is this from the meteor shower? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess not. Because you see meteorites and kryptonite and meteor rocks and all that, whatever terminology they use, under the surface here. And you assume, okay, so some rocks fell to hit this lake during the meteor shower. And they've just been
and
there.
Nothing happened to anything that was in that lake up until this moment of time.
Well, yeah, you think there'd be, I don't know, two-headed fish or some kind. Well, there's no – well, you do see a sign in front of the lake. It says no fishing, no swimming, something else.
There is a warning.
What was the third one? I don't remember. But basically, you know, from the Department of Wildlife Safety Service or something like that, a warning sign outside of Crater Lake. So naturally, they just let high school students hang out there. And so Clark and Chloe show up to this party, which is funny in and of itself. Like, why are Clark and Chloe going to this party?
They're not even part of the football team.
Like, do you know anyone here? How are you even invited? Like, is this it's just common knowledge that takes place?
She went there to get a scoop.
Right. Yeah. So Chloe's complaining about how cold it is, and Clark's like, I don't think it's that bad. She says, what are you, from an ice planet? It's like, yes he is. And most interpretations of Krypton is an ice planet. And this episode really starts the whole Clark and Chloe are friends, but they don't date because they're like best friends. And it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, they have an interesting dynamic here.
They have a Harry and Sally dynamic.
Harry and Sally, yeah, because it's like, is this not a date between Clark and Chloe, right? It's like, what's going on here? So she goes to warm up by the fire, and we're introduced to the appropriately named Sean Kelvin. Did you catch this, his last name?
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Oh, my God.
Temperature and all that.
Temperature, okay.
So he's a jock. He's on the football team. Of course, we never met him before. But, you know, it's okay. It's the fifth episode. I'm going to cut him some slack. I can imagine this guy was around on the football team during football season. And he's wearing a letter jacket, so we know he's a jock, right? That's a universal sign for a jock. Although,
or you could be in band.
Yeah, or you could be in academics or newspaper. Look, okay, I get getting a letter jacket for athletics. Obviously, that's what they were for. I think it's cool to get them for extracurriculars, you know? Be in band, be in newspaper. I mean, that's why I got my jacket. But then academics? It's like, really? Like, don't you think giving a letter jacket for academics is like giving a trophy to everybody in Little League for just participating? You know what I mean?
Okay, when you say academics, are you mean like academic competitions?
No, I mean academic. You literally get one for academics. Like, seriously, if you had like a B+ average for a year in a row, like, didn't you get a letter jacket? And how it worked?
I don't remember that, because I
got a D. I ended up getting a D for my D.
D for Dulles.
D for Dulles. Speaking of academics, so I got a D
it's a
for
great school
it,
now,
but I actually won my letter jacket from my extracurricular. So one new letter jacket, but you know what I'm saying, right? It's like it feels like we gotta include everybody. You don't let anyone feel left out.
I think you kind of have it messed up. I think you get a letter for having academics. You don't get the actual jacket, because I know people who had letters and didn't have the jacket. So the jacket, you had to do extracurricular activities.
Well, it has been a while since we've been in high school, but anyway, be that as it may. It's quickly established that this Sean guy is kind of a dog. You know, he's trolling for girls at this party. But hey, he's at a high school party. What do you expect from these people? So he goes up to Chloe at the fire, and he's laying some really, really lame pickup lines on her. So she's rubbing her hands together, and he's like, hey, I could rub those for you. <It's> like, <"What?" laughs> And her reaction is perfect. She's like, wow, I can't believe you actually delivered those lines with a straight face. But she enjoys the attention.
Yeah.
So he asks for a number, and she's like, okay, you're not going to call me, but here you go. And she writes it on his hand, which becomes important later.
Yes.
See, this is before smartphones, kids. And you can just say, hey, what's your digits? And put them in your phone, you know? Plus, after he gets thrown in the lake, spoiler, it would have ruined his phone. So writing the number on the hand was a nice setup for later on in the episode. But then Clark comes over here and he's like, did I just see you give Sean your number? And she has this great line. Even though I don't have raven hair and the initials LL, men do still find me attractive. Which is, you know, a reference to Lana, but obviously a reference to Lois down the line for Superman. So then Sean leaves because Whitney pulls him over and says, hey, we're throwing Hail Marys on the lake, man. Come on. So they all go and just throwing around the football. And Whitney's like, what's you doing that Chloe Sullivan chick? He's like, just another notch, bro. It's like, well, wow. And even Whitney says, wow, that's cold. Which is the first cold? Of several, yeah, the first of several references, which I thought were pretty funny, actually, of, you know, him turning into a cold monster. So they're throwing the ball around. Whitney throws it too far because he's not as good as a quarterback as we were led to believe, apparently. So Sean has to go out and get the ball. He's like, okay, I'll get it. So the rest of the guys leave because the pizza's here.
Can we talk about that pizza, though? Like, can you imagine? Yeah, I would like to order pizza to be sent to the Crater Lake. is that how it works?
I didn't think about that. It's like, yeah, I was driving around for 30 minutes trying to find you because Crater Lake's kind of a vague address. So Sean's out there by himself. The ice starts cracking, and he falls into the lake, and it freezes over. And then you cut back to Whitney and the guys. You're like, hey, where's Sean? And they're like, probably in the back of some car. So they figure he's, you know, with some girl, so they don't think about him not meeting back up with them. And he gets trapped under the lake, and we see the glow of the meteor rocks, and we realize, oh, something's happening.
I was actually really surprised at how well that was shot, like being stuck underwater, and then from the top of as well, like he's trying to get out. I was like holding my breath when he was underwater.
Yeah, that was well done. I mean, for television budget, you know, they did a really good job of like, wow, this is pretty intense. I mean, imagine we've grown up in Texas here, so we've never had this situation, like being on a lake that's cold and getting trapped under it. But I can imagine that's a terrifying experience, you know, because you can't, I guess you're not strong enough to punch out of ice. Have you ever punched through ice?
No, I have never, but I can only imagine because ice can hurt.
Well, yeah, and, you know, Clark does it later and it's implied, oh, he has super strength. But, you know, there was one time my first car had manual windows, you know, with the crank windows. Mm-hmm. So not electronic. And it froze one day. We had some cold fronts, obviously, and sometimes your car freezes over. So what I did was it was so cool. I rolled down my window manually, but there was still a sheet of ice like Ooh. Covering the window. So I punched through it. It was so cool. I felt like Superman or the Terminator or something. Although that's a very thin layer of ice that had just frozen overnight. So it's not like a lake. So I get it. You can't punch through it. But when you're seeing these guys, like, hey, why don't you just punch through the ice, right? How hard is it?
Apparently, well, it's pretty hard. I was also like, find the hole you fell in.
Well, it already, that's the problem. Like, it freezes over so quickly because it's, you know.
Oh, kryptonite ice.
Well, not kryptonite ice. It's just earth ice. Like, if it's 20 degrees outside, water's going to freeze over. Makes it hard to break through. We fade to the next day, and Sean breaks out of the ice. And it's a cool reveal because we don't really see him immediately. We see his legs, and we see him approaching a fire, and then we see him kind of put his hands on the fire, and the camera spins around. We see he is blue. He's like Jack Frost looking. Blue, and he sucks the heat out of the fire, and his skin, you know, goes back to normal, and he looks like he's feeling a lot better. And then he walks away, and we see the fire pit is now just like a pile of ice.
How does that work? The absence of the absence of cold and fire. Wait, the absence of heat and fire, does it make it into ice?
Yeah, like, you know, they should have just had like the logs, you know. But they wanted that, you know, effect of, oh, look, he froze the fire. You don't freeze fire. Well, you know, fire's air.
This is one of those things, too, where I was trying to figure out what his power exactly was. Like, is it just to remove heat from things? Because if it was, like, to freeze things, he could have, like, easily just started, like, he was freezing things, too.
I would compare his power to Killer Frost, right? I mean, that's or Iceman, I guess, huh?
Well, like Iceman and Killer Frost, they can make objects and then shoot them at people. Like, but he couldn't really do that. He had to touch whatever he was touching, and it was just like how Chloe mentions it later. It's just like a battery requires juice. Like he needs to draw the power.
But Killer Frost shoots ice. Is that correct?
Yeah, if I understand correctly.
Okay,
I think.
So Sean Kelvin here is kind of like a watered down Killer Frost, right? He doesn't have like, he can't create ice or project ice or anything like that. But when he touches you, you're going to freeze.
Right.
So Sean is played by Michael Korestein, who has done pretty much nothing. He has been in, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. including his Smallville episode. He's been in 8 things. He has 8 credits on IMDb. And there was one post on his message board on IMDb. And I bring it up because the subject is just because ... Okay. So he has one comment on his message board. I guess he acting didn't stick for him. He just fell out of acting. I mean, he was okay in this episode. Now, to me, he looked a lot like James Vanderbeek. What do you think?
Oh, yes. When you mention it now.
Like, if they had to recast Dawson on Dawson's Creek, totally should have cast this guy, right? This guy probably auditioned for Dawson's Creek and didn't get it.
And that's the reason why I say, oh, well, there's a superhero Dawson's Creek.
Somebody kept him in, like, the WB casting folder, and they found this guy. Seriously, this guy, in some scenes, I'm like, yeah, it's James Vanderbeek, man. Like, I could probably convince people if I showed him this episode, hey, James Vanderbeek is in this episode. Because he's blue half the time, too. That helps cover it up. But anyway, did not really catch on. I guess his other biggest project or note was Get Over It, the movie from 2001. He was Love Scud boy band member number 2. So,
not number 1.
No, number 2.
Number 2. Okay.
You ever seen Get Over It with Kirsten Dunst and
I might have
Colin Hanks, like, Ben Foster, if it Zoe was Saldana, Ed Bingley Jr. I'm just reading the IMDb list.
Okay,
now.
I don't
know
like, man,
off the top of my
you're
head.
Really good at memory.
It's one of my favorite movies.
No. So everyone in that movie became a really, really good actor except
for poor Michael Korstein. Anyway, I'm sure he's a nice guy. He did an okay job in this episode. Didn't really ask much of him, right? It wasn't a very demanding role. Wasn't very nuanced. You know, he was just the bad guy this episode. And you know the worst part about this whole thing is about Sean going out to the lake? He didn't even get the football. He's still out there.
He's still out there sitting on the lake.
So we go to the main credits, come back. The Kents are doing some finances, you know, Martha and Jonathan. Clark overhears him and does some quick math in his head. And I like how this establishes that Clark is a smart guy.
Well, he's like super smart though.
People forget that Superman is smart. Look at Batman versus Superman. It's always like brain versus brawn, right? They think
true.
Batman is tactical genius and Superman is just a dumb brute with superpowers. I'm like, no, Superman has the knowledge of the 28 known galaxies. Okay. I mean, not yet in Smallville, right? But he has a super brain, you know? So yes, he's good at math. He's a smart guy. Like I'm sick of people playing him off as like, he's dumb, you know? He's naive, yes, but he's not dumb. There's a difference. So he does all the Kent's math real quick for him. And bottom line, you know, the Kent farm is falling on rough times. And so they're trying to figure out, oh, should we take out a loan? Should we do this? Should we do that? Anyway, it's a nice little moment between the Kents and Clark.
And it's a nice real life moment.
Yes, yes. And early on in the show, there was a lot of stuff like this, like real life. You know, and I think most of the first season and then maybe – this maybe carries on until about the 3rd season, maybe, with, like, the Kents and the farm. Like, running a farm was an important part of their family. So there's a funny bit here with Clark, and he runs off to school. Then his, like, toast or his Pop-Tart or whatever it is pops up out of the toaster, and he runs back in time to catch it. And he runs back out. But the problem with it, it's a cute moment. But the problem here is then we cut to outside, and he's walking to the bus with Pete and Chloe in front of his house. So it's like, what did you super speed outside to where Pete and Chloe are waiting? That doesn't make any sense. What, do Pete and Chloe, like, go to Clark's house to get on the bus? Like, it doesn't, if there's a bus stop near Clark's house, shouldn't it be him and Lana? Because she's the one that's closest by, right?
Well, like, no, because Whitney's going to go pick up Lana in his car.
Yeah, but would Pete and Chloe's parents drop him off at Clark's house to get picked up by the bus? Doesn't make any sense. Anyway, this is all just contrivance for them to have scenes together and dialogue, which is fine, you know, because it's always fun to see Clark, Pete, and Chloe together. So then we get Lex visiting Martha at the Kent farm, and he's going to have a meeting of all the local farmers because he is aware that, you know, finances are down, you know, tough economic times, as they say, and he has a proposal to help out the community because, you know, he's new there and he wants to improve the Luther name because he knows it has a bad reputation. And he knows Jonathan won't go for it, so that's why he asked Martha because, you know, he's identified her as the more sensible one, which in many cases is true. So she says they'll think about it, and that sets up. See, this is a whole subplot in this episode, kind of tie into that scene we just talked about with Martha and Jonathan doing the finances. Mm-hmm. There's a subplot here, this whole episode, about Lex and the Kents and their relationship to each other and, you know, the Kent farm and the finances and all that. And I think it was an okay subplot, but it wasn't really special or anything.
Yeah, for me, I felt like it didn't really need to be there.
Well, it didn't do anything. Like, nothing was accomplished from it, right?
Like, the only thing was is that later on, they end up at the place, at Lex's. I think they could have done any type of story.
Well, that or they could have copied and pasted this subplot to any other episode. Like, it had no... Other than the contrivance of getting everyone in the same place at the end of the episode, it had no role in the greater episode.
Well, maybe they're playing on relationships this whole episode. Like, that's a theme, and this is the relationship between Jonathan and Lex. I don't know. Just pulling straws.
Pulling straws. So Lex is getting around this episode, because the next time we see him, he's at the beanery, and he runs into Lana, who's just always hanging out there reading.
That's how you know it's a small ville. Because he's there, like, 2 minutes later, he's at a different place.
It's a small ville. He's, of course, trying to play matchmaker again with Clark and Lana. He's making some snide remarks about Whitney and kind of building up Clark when he's talking to Lana. And Lana, to her credit, she stands up for her boyfriend, Whitney. She says to Lex, "For someone who wants people to keep an open mind, you're pretty quick to judge." Which is completely legitimate, you know? Yeah. He sees Whitney as a jock football player, and... She sees more than that in him. We haven't yet, as the audience, but Lana sees more than that, and the whole town of Smallville sees Lex as a spoiled rich brat, and he's more than that, and he wants the town to see that. So that's a good observation by Lana. So good for her. I'm continued to be impressed by Lana in these early episodes.
These early episodes, there's the cute word.
Yeah, but then of course, she's explained to Lex that, oh yeah, me and Whitney are going to Metropolis tomorrow, and we're gonna see. We're going to see an art exhibit, and we've got the whole day planned. It's going to be great. And Lex is like, okay. And not 2 seconds later, Whitney comes in, and he's like, hey, what's going on? She's like, oh, just looking at our plans for tomorrow. And he's like, oh, tomorrow. Man, well, you know, some of the guys, we ordered the fight on pay-per-view, and I already gave him my money, so yeah, I'm going to have to pass. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like,
I know, right?
How much did you pay? Like $100? How much is this fight? How many friends are getting together? Why? It's just such an of all the excuses to like cancel a whole day you had planned with your girlfriend. Putting a little money on a fight to watch with some friends is like number 98 on the list, right?
Yeah, and Lana made the whole scene like, oh, this has happened before, so she's gonna whatever.
Yeah, she seemed like, oh, this again. You know, it wasn't like a huge shock to her.
What stole that scene for me, though, is when Whitney leaves and Lex is still sitting there, and he gives it that look. It's like, I told you so.
I told you so. Yeah, but it's just like, dude, like, just eat the $40 and have the day with your girlfriend, right? But okay, so that kind of brings me back to what day of the week is this? This little game I like to play on Smallville. What day of the week is this, right? So we saw that the previous night was a crazy party, right?
Right.
Next day... Clark, Pete, and Chloe are going to school. They're getting on the bus, right? This scene takes place sometime after that. Lana is at the coffee shop.
Oh.
So, okay, so this must be after school, right? Because they're talking about tomorrow, Saturday. Like, oh, okay, so the crazy party was on Thursday, which is odd, by the way, to have some, I don't know, maybe I was too much of a square in high school, but I didn't go out and do crazy things on Thursday night, right? You think all those guys would go do that on Friday or Saturday, but not on a Thursday.
And I was also kind of confused because, like, the next morning, Pete was like, so did he call?
Yeah, well, did like, he call? Well, it's give him, like, 7:30 in the morning, Pete. I don't know.
That's why I was confused. It's like maybe the party was over the weekend and they were just coming back from the
weekend. Yeah, this is Monday, but no, because the whole reason I'm bringing this up now is so Clark walks by, you know, the beanery. He sees Lana's in there. So Lex comes out and intercepts him, right? And he's like, hey, now's your chance with Lana. And Clark says, she has a boyfriend, Lex. And I love his line here. Words to live by when you're in high school. A high school boyfriend isn't a husband. He's an obstacle. So I think we've all been there. We've all been there at certain times in our lives. So he offers to give Clark 2 Radiohead tickets and a round-trip limo to Metropolis.
First off, why does he have 2 radio tickets in his pockets?
Did he come here with this in mind? Like, he just, you know, has him ready for any situation.
Well, when you think about it later, Clark is talking to Jonathan about what he's doing. It's like, yeah, Lex gave me 2 tickets and a limo. And he said, it looks like he got the whole... Clark family down. I mean, the whole
Clark family. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, he has all he's got all our evenings plans worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it was part of his plan.
It's a master orchestration by the greatest criminal mind of our time.
Hey, exactly. That's what I was like.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't fit it past Lex. It's just funny. He just pulls out these 2 tickets to Radiohead, and I guess Radiohead they're pretty big band, you know, it was pretty main. That was Smallville, like, being in tune with what was popular at the time. So I like how it wasn't just, like, some made-up band, like, you know, I don't know. Pointed Circle is playing this weekend.
And it's a good thing they said that he was in Metropolis, because I don't think I would have believed if Radiohead was going
to be. Yeah, they're not coming to Smallville. Remy Zero comes to Smallville, but not Radiohead. So bringing it back around to, like, what day of the week is it? Should make that a segment on. We've established that this is Friday, right? If today's Friday, Lana's at the coffee shop, Clark's walking by, you assume that school's over. I'm like, oh, that's fine. They went to school. This is after school. It's not a problem. But the problem is the next scene we give with Clark, he's back at school with Chloe and Pete. And it's like, wait, is this the next day? Like, is it? But it's not. It's the same day because they're wearing the same clothes. So it's just contrivance to, like, oh, we need Pete and Chloe and Clark to all talk.
Well, I know we didn't have this in our high school, but off-campus lunch, maybe it was lunchtime.
Off-campus lunch.
Yeah. I'm just saying. I'm trying to help.
They're those guys that take their off periods in the middle of the day, which makes no sense. Like, do you have off periods when you were an upperclassman?
Yes, I had options to do off periods, but I decided to stay because didn't have anything better to do.
Because you're Asian, that's why you decided to stay.
Yeah, I took a bunch of computer courses instead.
Of course you did. You're not helping the cause, Nick. anyway, I'm a slacker white guy, so I took first and second period off. Do you see what I'm saying here, though? No, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they could have constructed that better. But the other reason they're back at school is we see Sean Kelvin again. He's gone to the nurse's office because he's feeling cold. And she takes his temperature, and it's at, like, 32 degrees. She's like, oh, that can't be right. Let me feel your head. And then he, like, sucks the heat out of her, and he feels like, oh, I'm feeling better now. So he's figured out, oh, okay, body contact, body temperature, body heat, that's the answer. That's what's going to make me feel better.
What's really weird is that he decides to go back to school. Like, oh, dude, I just totally slept underwater for a whole night. In freezing cold water, and then I'm just gonna get out of the ice and just walk right back to school.
I better get to school, man.
Like, nothing else is happening for me. So
that is true. Lots of contrivances in this episode. For sure. It's like, seriously, if there's ever a reason to skip school, that's near the top of the list, right? So once he figures out body heat is the answer to his problems, he decides, oh, I'll just open my little black book here, and.
A thing back then, guys.
Yeah, Is that, did people not use that terminology anymore?
They probably use the terminology, but don't understand what it is, because everyone just puts their numbers
in itself. Gone through his Rolodex. No, let's keep using outdated terminology. To scroll through his contacts to find old girls that he used to date. So the first girl on Sean's list is Chloe, because obviously she's the last girl he talked to. He runs up to them. He's like, hey, Chloe, don't I owe you a phone call? She's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I. And he's like, what are you doing right now? She's like, oh, well, I got to put the paper to bed. He's like, oh, okay. And then he just wanders off. It's like, man, what a jerk.
And then Clark is just looking at him menacingly, like, something's up.
Yeah.
He has a detective hat on. It doesn't say anything, but you could tell. Clark wears his heart on his sleeve.
If he had super hearing yet, he totally would have been eavesdropping, because what we see, Sean goes over to Jenna, who was his ex-girlfriend, who it had been established that Chloe is, like, what, biology partners with Jenna or something like that, when Sean first talks to her. And he's like, I'm in bio with Jenna. I don't know what happened there. And blah, 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 blah. So this character had been established earlier. So it's not like he just walked up to some random girl. But we see he's talking to her, and they walk off together. And apparently they're going to go get together.
So is it the end of the day then?
Yeah, exactly. So we're back to the whole, like, what day is it? What time of day is it? Is this after school? Did Clark and Pete, maybe Clark and Pete just went back to school to hang out with Chloe or something. I don't know.
Oh, that could be it, yeah.
And then I believe we just go straight to they're at Jenna's house, I assume. And she's taking a shower, and we get this weird, like, Michael Myers cam from Halloween.
Yeah.
It's like, we know who's here. Like, what are you trying to say with this? It was a very odd creative choice, I thought. Because it's not like, oh, we have an intruder in the house and he's stalking. Like, we know the whole reason he got with her is so he could steal her body heat. So he's the one there causing a threat. So it's just weird they try to play it up as, oh, Look at this handheld camera peeking around the corner and peeking around the shower curtain.
Well, I was also thinking, it's like, if he's going to go through all this trouble to get her into showers, like, why not just steal the heat immediately as soon as they get to the house?
Yeah, he goes through some very strange procedures, like for this, yes. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, let's go back to your place, let's take a shower, let's do that. Like, with Chloe later on, he drops all these flower petals, and it's just like, dude, you need this to survive, just get down to business. Like, what's your deal? He pulls back the shower curtain, and she sees that he's, like, become blue again because he's running out of body heat. And she's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, I just want to stay warm.
Yeah, this whole episode is literally him just trying to get better, guys. He's not a villain. He just has a problem, and he's trying to find an out.
he could have gone about it in a less homicidal way. But, yeah, so he grabs Jenna, and she's become completely blue at this point. And he lets her go, and she shatters on the floor. Like, yeah, we don't see it, well, we hear it. And I feel like that's probably a better approach, because I don't know if they had the budget to play that off correctly. But it's very T-1000-esque.
But I was actually more surprised. I was like, did they just kill a high school girl on this TV show?
Yes, and that is our first Smallville High School student death count. We've already had one faculty death, but that brings our student death up to one. And that there's more to come with those. But, yeah, that is pretty intense, especially the way they went about it, right?
Mm-hmm. I was actually more – I was like – I thought that she might get frozen and then let down, like, and she falls, and then she stays solid, and she's just lying on the ground, and so she gets thawed out later. But as soon as I heard it shattered, I was like, I think they just killed her. But that bathroom was really big. I just have to say, because they had a whole struggle. I don't know if this was, like, a master bathroom.
They had a whole struggle.
Think about it, though. Do you see how big that bathroom was? She ran away.
She ran away in the
bathroom. She ran away in the bathroom. I'm just trying to say, like, even my bathroom right now, it's not that big. It's like, I don't understand. Where is this person? This
master bathroom.
Where are your parents in the first place? You're in high school.
Where are any of these parents? Because you're right. We see her house. I assume this is her house. No parents, right? And then we see Sean later on where he's like, you know, by the fireplace at presumably his house. He's calling girls, eventually calls Chloe. But yeah, where are his parents, right? Where are the parents here? And that's a huge problem this episode.
Made sense if there were actual people at Lex's thing that he gathered, then it would have been like, oh, this is where they
maybe went. Maybe all these people's parents are there. Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point, Nick. I hadn't thought about that for like to at least explain where all the parents might have been. Because in the earlier episodes that we've already discussed, the parents were a factor, you know, even for the freaks of the week. So then for a complete change of mood, we go back to the Kent farm, and Clark comes in and talks to his parents. He says, hello, citizens. And he's like feeling real good about himself. And we've all experienced this, right?
Is that a Superman moment, though? Hello, citizens.
Well, it's just, you know, him being happy. It just, I like it. It's happy Clark. And we've all experienced that. Like, oh man, I'm going out on this date, or this girl likes me, or, you know, you're on this cloud nine.
Not a date.
Yeah, not a date. Yeah, Clark goes to great lengths to explain this is not a date, even though, you know, he feels like it's a date. Because that's what it is. You know, he asked Lana out, and he immediately said, oh, hey, just as friends. And she's like, oh, sure. Would she have gone out with him had he not thrown out the just friends thing? What do you think?
I don't know. She mulled
He kind of cut her off, you know, because he was sensing the no, so he just threw out the just friends card just to seal the deal. You know?
Well, the whole episode does play on that, though. So let's talk about the whole episode, and then once we're done, then we'll ask that question again.
We can analyze the just friendsness of the episode, yeah.
The just friendsness.
So Chloe comes over, as all good platonic girlfriends do, comes over to help Clark get ready for his date. And I like the advice she gives him. If a girl wears something new to hang out with you, you know that at least she thinks it's a date. So I feel like that's a pretty accurate statement.
No, that's a good statement, yeah.
And while Clark's, you know, changing, and it's funny, he like pulls out all these clothes for Chloe. She's like, oh, burn that. She's very critical of his wardrobe. And eventually they pick blue, right? Oh,
yeah, I said blue looks good on you.
Blue's a good color on you. Oh, because you're Superman. But she gets a phone call from Sean here, and I rewound the episode to confirm this, but you hear the other side of the conversation. I don't think it was necessary to hear him on the other line, but he says, Chloe, don't I owe you a phone call? And that is literally cut and paste from earlier in the episode when he comes up to her at the school. He says, Chloe, don't I owe you a phone call? And yeah, I don't know why they did it, but they clearly just cut and paste the same take of that dialogue and put it on the other end of the phone. I don't think it was necessary.
I don't think that was necessary either.
But it was just weird. It kind of drew attention to itself. All she could have said was, oh, hey, Sean. And that's all you needed. You knew what was going on there. So it's a good thing. I made a note of this. It's a good thing Lana was not wearing her necklace this episode, right?
Because she wears it randomly.
Well, I say that because I feel like they did a good job of establishing why she was or wasn't wearing it at certain times in the last four episodes. You know, like Whitney had it, or there was a dress code somewhere, or you know, she was jogging, right? Like, there was a reason for her not to have this necklace on, but in this episode, she just doesn't have it for no reason. So I guess it would be contrived if they kept having an explanation for her not to wear it. But if it's something that's established that she wears all the time, I mean, that's why Clark could never get near her or talk to her before the pilot, because she always wore her necklace. So then we get a real good scene here between Clark and Lana in the limo. The limo's going to pick him up, and they're just talking, and Clark's showing some, you know, intuitiveness in Lana's situation, commenting that she always retreats into a book, and she's like, how do you know these things? Are you stalking me? Are you a creeper? Do you watch me with a telescope? You know, that's probably why he knows these things.
Well, it's funny because he says that, yeah, I just get into astronomy and I think about what it'd be like in different worlds. Like, that's the only reason why you have a telescope. You use it to look at Lana at night.
And then he does a little magic trick with some cars and uses his X-ray vision. So it's a cute scene. It's a cute scene.
I was actually, it's like, man, he knows magic tricks. That's actually pretty cool. And then I realized, oh, he's
you thought he was really into a magic trick.
Yeah, I really did.
Lana does mention she did not tell Whitney about this.
The reason why you don't tell somebody is because you don't want other people to blow it up out of proportion. But it's also because part of you also thinks this is not a good thing if it were to, if something to come out.
You know it's wrong.
Well, not I'm not saying like, you know, it's wrong. It's more of like, if you try to put a label on it yourself too, you ruin the night, I guess.
Yeah, because like, oh, it's a friend thing. They do this awkward talking around it the whole episode.
Yes. Is this weird?
Wow, thanks. Well, thanks, Lana. Way to ruin the mood, right? Right. Speaking of ruining the mood, she turns on the TV, and it's like a breaking news out of Smallville tonight. Student Jenna so-and-so was found dead in her home, and Clark's like, stop the car, because he knows that Sean went off with Jenna, and now Sean's going to go out with Chloe, so he figures Chloe's next. You know, Lana turning on the TV, it did ruin their date, so that's a bummer, but it did end up saving Chloe's life, so it's hard to complain about that, because you know Clark rushes to the school, and meanwhile Chloe has been waiting on Sean to show up. Apparently he was going to bring her a cappuccino or something.
When I think about it now, Lana saying at the end is like, Whitney's always there for me, and making him feel like he's never always there for her, but he's always there for Chloe.
That's
just
true.
Saying.
True love.
Whenever Chloe's in trouble, he's there.
Clark gave up his date with Lana to save Chloe. I mean, if that's not choosing Chloe over Lana, I don't know what is, right?
Well, I would probably choose Chloe, too, if I had realized that the last person who got murdered was from the person that's currently trying to get on Chloe.
Oh, I thought you just meant choose Chloe, period. I mean...
Well, what I mean, in that scenario...
I am team Chloe on this show. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good to you.
So, we mentioned this earlier, but Sean going through these ridiculous, like... ways of getting these girls, like... He could have just... He literally could have just shown up and killed Chloe. Killed her in the torch office. But instead, he, like... knocks on the door and leaves a rose petal trail to the pool and puts a sign on the door that says come in. And yeah, it makes a cool set piece where like the pool, Chloe tries to get away, falls in the pool, swims across, he freezes the water, she gets trapped in there. Clark comes in, busts in, breaks through the ice like when we talked about earlier, pulls her out, throws Sean 20 feet as he always does.
And Chloe doesn't ask anything about that.
Well, she's in shock. Give her a break, right? True.
Well, the only thing that I saw, I was just like, okay, so he just lures her there because there's a lock on that door. That was my original thought.
There's a lot. Well, I mean, he could have come in the torch and locked that door.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Like, anyway, but I'll allow it because it was a cool set piece. Clark has dropped Lana off back at the beanery, and he's like, whoa, I'll be back. I'll explain everything. Just wait here. She's like, okay. And she's just reading at the beanery, and Pete comes in on a date, which is funny. And he actually, there's a Pete Lana scene, which is nice to see. They're two characters that never really get any scenes together.
It wasn't a date, right?
Right. Yeah. You walk in, you think it's a date, and Lana's like, "Hey, would you and your date like to take a spin in a limo?" He's like, "Oh, that's not my date. She's just my friend."
This whole episode was just dates with friends,
exploring the friend zone. Whitney comes in for, I guess, the fight's over.
Like, yeah, I was like, wait, so why couldn't you go? Because the fight is. must be done.
Must have been a Ronda Rousey fight and lasted 30 seconds.
Oh man. Current events.
But let's not forget about the Kents. Because remember, they have gone to Luther Mansion for Lex Luthor's presentation on how to make more money as a Smallville farmer. And he had promised that it was going to be the whole community, but in fact, it was just the two of them. Which is a good play by Lex, because he knew that Jonathan wasn't going to come if he had invited them personally. But if the whole community was coming, he figured he'd be a part of it, that kind of thing. And yeah, he has an interest in the Kents, and Jonathan even asked him, he's like, why are you so interested in my family? And Lex says, well, your son saved my life. You know, he gave me a second chance, and I'm just trying to make the world a better place now. So I thought that was, you know, that makes sense why Lex would be so connected to the Kents now.
This is what I like about this Lex, is that he's trying to do what he thinks is the best rather than what people believe is the best. And that's why he's so pushy about it. Like, the whole trying to set up Lana and Clark, the whole situation with the Kents. He actually has more of Clark's future in mind rather than the family's.
He doesn't know Clark has superpowers, so he's thinking, well, this Kent farm's going to go into debt, and Clark's going to be stuck working on this farm the rest of his life, you know? He's going to go into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters, and he wants to be at the Academy with Biggs and Tank, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a Star Wars reference. I was hoping you'd appreciate that a little more. Anyway, so we get a continuation of Whitney and Lana's scene. He's, you know, I actually like how Whitney played this. He's like, you know, this is probably a time where I just shouldn't say anything, but... what's going on here? Like, why did you have a limo and what were you doing? And she says, well, you were out with your friends and I went out with Clark.
And what's really funny is that she didn't say I was out with my friends. She said I was with Clark.
Yeah, like, I thought she was going to say your friends and my friends. Yeah,
she knew it would push a button.
And he's like, so. Was this some kind of test? Like, did you want to see what I would do? Like, I don't get it. But their conversation is interrupted because we see Sean out in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. He's like waving him down, and then Whitney just swerves out of the way and crashes into the ditch.
So I actually rewound this. He steps on the accelerator and then swerves out of the way. I was actually really confused. I was like, wait, did he go faster? Did he hit the brakes? He steps on the accelerator and he swerves away. So I wasn't sure what was going on there because I watched it twice because the bigger one's the brake, right? I'm just making one on the left. The bigger one's the brake, right?
I title these podcasts based off the episodes, but if I titled them like based off a quote of the episode, it would be the bigger one's the brake, right? How long have you been driving, Nick? For 10 years.
I'm just trying to paint what I saw.
The bigger one's the brake.
The left side brake with the bigger pedal was not pressed. It was the accelerator, and he swerves out of the way. So at first I was thinking like, oh, he's gonna hit him. But it shows him swerving.
Well, this is Whitney's third car accident five episodes. Well, technically second accident, but third time his truck has been wrecked. Because remember, Clark stacked it between two other trucks in the pilot. So, man, his insurance. And why is Sean out here? Like, why is he – I guess he – well, we've seen he –
maybe the generator was around that.
Yeah, we saw that he went to the Smallville, you know, town power plant or whatever. Sucked all the power out of that, so there were some brownouts in the town. And then we see that Luther Mansion has a power generator, so maybe he was wandering over there because he saw there was still power.
Oh, yeah. I did like how when Clark came back to the cafe, and then he saw the lights flickering, and he was just like, it's him. I was like, for me, I would have not put two together.
Well, that's why Clark's a smart guy.
Smart,
you know,
yeah.
He can do intricate good math just by overhearing it in the other room. So.
Yeah.
I guess that's – but it's all so contrived to get these characters together. Like Whitney and Lana. So, well, they crash their truck in the ditch. Sean is nowhere to be found, which is odd. You think he was waving people down so they crashed their car so he could suck their body heat, right?
Yeah.
But they crash, and where is Sean? He's nowhere. Lana twists her ankle or something, but then – Whitney and her hobble over to the Luther Mansion. It's like, oh, look, the power salon at Luther Mansion. Must be the generator. Let's go over there. And then the Kents are there. I guess Clark maybe is running around town and sees the Luther Mansion also still has power, and that's why he shows up there?
Maybe. Well, he sees the car first.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He does see that. He sees the car first, and then he sees Luther Mansion there. Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
But when he finds the car, Sean pops out and grabs him. It's like, where was Sean when Whitney and Lana were hobbling over the Luther Mansion?
I don't know.
Easy money right there.
See, it would make more sense, though, if he actually did, like, hit him with the back of the car when he swerved. and knocked the wind out of him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There you go. And then he kind of woke up and Clark was, yeah. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe it just happened off screen.
I feel like the writers owe me some money because I'm trying to explain everything that
happens. Fanboy justifications. It's all part of the job, Nick. It's all part of the job. So Wendy and Lana show up at Luther Mansion, and Martha's like, "Where's Clark?" Because she knows they're supposed to be together. I like how Jonathan's like, "Martha, it's Clark. Don't worry about it." You know, he's not concerned.
As soon as he said it, he's the one that actually has been knocked out.
Yeah. So Clark gets frozen, and of course he wakes up due to his Kryptonian metabolism. He's fine. Also, for some reason, Jonathan and Martha decide to start getting some flashlights and looking around the Luther Mansion, like for the generator and that kind of stuff. Lex is like, "Hey, I can do it. Don't worry about it." And they just leave. He's like, "Oh, okay." But they leave him there with Whitney and Lana, and he goes over to Lana and says, "Sorry about your date."
Yeah.
Just rubbing it in. Now's not the time for that, Lex.
Well, it's also like, I think it was also for him to take a jab at Whitney as well.
He's like, I never get to talk to this guy. Let me.
He's like, "Hey, sorry about your date. Yeah, your girlfriend was on a date."
Let me throw some shade. So Martha's out in the back checking the generator again for no reason. I don't understand why the parents have been dispatched to do this when Lex obviously has like security people and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
But then Sean comes up to her and he's like, "Hey." Luckily, Clark shows up right around then and he stops like, "Mom, go inside." He's like, "Is that your mom? She's hot."
I don't know if that was like the play on words because he needs heat. So.
Well, it was a double because look, Annette O'Toole is an attractive woman, so it was kind of a double meaning there. So that was funny. They have their little villain confrontation, and Sean's like, "Who's gonna stop me? You, brr." I thought that was pretty funny. So they fight, and you know, once again, Clark kicks him like 30 feet. And
you
mean
I don't think you would call that a fight. I think he just got pushed around a lot.
That's true, because he doesn't have superpowers or anything.
Yeah.
So it's really a one-sided fight. But he sneaks up on Clark again and starts, you know, sucking his heat. But he does the whole classic, like, villain threatens your immediate family and loved ones to motivate the hero to victory speech. Like,
and I like how he said Lana.
Yeah, like, how do you know? First of all, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to get your mom and your dad. How do you know your dad's in there? And Lana. How do you know Lana's in there? And why do you even know that Clark likes Lana? Like, what? As far as you know, Lana is Whitney's girlfriend. Like, why are you saying this, right?
By watching this show, I'm pretty sure everyone knows Clark likes Lana.
It's like Spider-Man. Everybody knows, Peter. Speaking of Spider-Man, this reminded me at the end of Spider-Man, the first one. Green Goblin's like, "Now that you really pissed me off, I'm going to finish your girlfriend nice and slow." You know what he says to Peter at the end? Like, we got to threaten the girl for the love interest. You know, to motivate the hero to victory. So Clark's like, "I'm not gonna let you hurt them." He kicks him into the lake. Yeah. Which, has it been established that Luther Mansion is next to a lake? Like,
I don't think so.
I don't think before or after. I don't think we've ever seen this. But what do you think happens to Sean here, by the way?
Exactly. Okay, I was gonna bring that up. It's like, so does he get turned in? Is he in pop school? Like, is he carved out or something like that? No one. I'm not too sure. They don't give a resolve. And then for me, if I was the cops, I would have been like, "Kent, this is like your fourth time."
Well, no one really used to know that Clark was there.
That's
like,
right.
Assuming Sean, you know, died or something, nobody knows Clark was ever there. So that's probably because obviously the Kents aren't going to give away that information because it's just suspicious.
That's true.
But with Miles Miller, the executive producer of Smallville, actually commented on this vague ending.
Oh, okay.
He says, "The episode was entertaining. In a different way to tell the Freak of the Week story, but the end is a bit unsatisfying. You don't know where the kid is. Did Clark kill him? We had a struggle initially in the show. We didn't want to see Clark kill anybody, but he needed to be able to defeat the bad guys. It's something that we address later, but Cool is a case in point. At the end of the show, where do the bad guys go? In that episode, Clark tosses him into the water, and it freezes. So what does that mean?" And that's exactly what we're talking about here. Like,
oh, okay. So, man, you got me all worked up thinking that he was going to give an explanation.
No, he's saying the same thing we are.
Damn it. So are we trying to say that if he never got any heat, he would have ended up dying?
See, I'm not sure because
it's like, I thought he would just be frozen. And then like, as soon as he's been thawed out, he's back to his powers.
Yeah, he's parasitic, right? He's kind of like Parasite, right? But when Parasite, the Superman villain Parasite, doesn't have to suck energy from people, I don't think. The mechanics of all these supervillains and powers are This is the stuff of true nerds, Nick. I don't think we're quite on that level. I'm proud to say I cannot tell you the mechanics of these things. But wrapping up this episode, we get a scene. Well, by the way, Jonathan has been working on this motorcycle for no reason the whole episode. Did you notice this?
Yes, like, yes, yes.
Since when is Jonathan is like, does not strike me as the motorcycle type.
Well, more of like, man, my farm is not doing well, and you have all these things. I'm just gonna build a motorcycle while things are just trying to blow over.
Like, yeah, it's just a hobby it's a stress relief, right? Just working on the old bike. And I don't think we ever see this bike ever again, by the way.
Well,
maybe. Clark has that motorcycle in season 2 when he's on the Red Kryptonite. That's Jonathan's bicycle. Okay. Oh, you got me there, show. Well done, Smallville. Well done. Touche. You got me. But it was just so random that Jonathan can't even have a motorcycle. But the scene is just, it's to give Jonathan something to do in this scene where he's talking to Lex. Because Lex shows up at the barn, and he's like, hey, I saw you took out a bank loan. Jonathan has turned down Lex's offer to help them on the farm because he still questions the Luthers. He's still very,
suspicious as well.
Suspicious, yes. He's suspicious of the Luthers, and he can't really blame him. I mean, Lex, what, he's like 21, 22? Like, who knows what this guy's doing, right? I mean, his father has established a certain way that Luther Court runs his businesses. So who's to say this 21 or 22-year-old isn't idealistic now but doesn't change his mind down the road and your farm is under their control and there's nothing you can do about it? So I don't blame Jonathan. I mean, I think the show does a good balancing act of, like, look, Lex is maybe trying to do the right thing, but Jonathan is not being ridiculous and turning down his help either. That he's perfectly legitimate in his reasoning not to. But then
Lex goes ahead and makes that, like, not really a threat type of thing. It's like, just contact me when you change your mind.
So let me go back to Smallville High, and you know, they take a moment here and actually reflect on the fact that a student has died. As you may note in our tally board, this is the first Smallville High School student who has died in the series, and they really, you know, it affects them. Like, Chloe's like, man, that could have been me, and you see a wall there, there's candles and notes and pictures and memorials and stuff, and that's a great moment because, yeah, like, if your classmate dies in this horrific way, it's going to affect you. Would you have liked to see them do this more often when somebody dies on the show? Like, I guess my deal is I wish that when people, because this is early enough in the show where it's not a big deal, but later on when people, like, turn into Freaks of the Week or they die or something, I would have liked those to have been established characters and not like, oh, hello, we just met you, but we're really sad that we're not going to see you anymore, even though we've only known you for this one episode. You know what I mean?
Because usually, like, even now, this fifth episode, when they introduce, I mean, I keep forgetting his first name, the Kelvin guy.
Sean.
When they introduce Sean, it's like, this must be the Freak of the Week. I've never seen him before. That was my first thought. It's like, I've never seen this guy before. Right. He must be it.
Well, but bottom line, I was impressed that they at least took the time to address the gravity of the situation of someone being murdered,
Yes.
In high school. And this is a kind of a weird thing at the end of this episode. It starts out with one song, and forgive me, I don't know what it was off the top of my head, like in that last scene where they have the memorial wall for Jenna, and it's like playing throughout the whole thing, and then Clark sees Lonnie, he walks over to her, and that song fades out, and then this other song fades in, and it's like two pop songs for the price of one, and it's the Jewel, Standing Still. It's like, standing do still. You want me? Like, come on now. Leave me hanging here. But
the timing will be off, Zach. You know how this works.
It's a good song, and you know, Jewel was pretty big name. So then we have our final tag of the episode with Clark and Lana, and he goes up to her and he's like, "Hey, sorry about leaving. You know, maybe we could try again sometime, and maybe this weekend." She's like, "Oh no, actually, Whitney is taking me to Metropolis this weekend. He planned the whole day. I think our non-date really freaked him out." And he's like, "Well, what did you tell him?" And she says, "The truth, that we're just friends."
What I actually really liked wasn't the fact that she said that. Was when Clark asked, like, curious question, why Whitney? And he goes, "Whenever I need him, he's there."
I'm like, that is not true. That is so inaccurate. Well, you know what I mean?
But the idea here is that Clark has to live his double life, and he will not always be there for her. And that's what he can't give. Because he left her alone, and then this whole thing happened. And there's the scene in the truck where Whitney's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, well, I think I just sprained my ankle." He's like, "Well, I just need to get you somewhere safe." I was like, man, good going, Whitney. And then in that moment, I could see that. Well, I don't know if this was planned, but Lana kind of gives that little eye, is like, "Oh, this is why I like him." Or, what a good guy.
Well, then I guess from her perspective, because we got to remember she doesn't see Clark doing all this stuff behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Like in Metamorphosis, Whitney saves her from the treehouse.
Yeah.
And X-Ray, you know, she doesn't know that Clark defeated Tina in the graveyard.
And that's what I mean. Whenever I need him, he's there. Like, Clark is probably thinking, little do you know, I've always been there, but I just can't tell you what I've been doing. You know?
Yeah, it's a good moment because it really sums up, like, the struggle, like, without being teen angsty. You know, it's, like, superhero angsty, which is fine. That's a different kind of angst, which is perfectly acceptable on these shows, you know?
Yeah, because, like, he stands there, and, like, I liked how it ended because, like, everyone's just walking by. The Jewel song is about, like, life passing by, and he's just standing there, and everybody walks away.
But he's going to be late for class, though.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
I was thinking maybe we could, you know, try again sometime. How about Saturday?
Whitney's taking me to the cities. Got the whole day planned. I think our non-date freaked him out.
What'd you tell him?
The truth. That we're just friends. I have to go.
Lana, why do you go out with him? Whitney, I mean.
Because whenever I need him, he's there. Guess he makes me feel safe.
So that is cool. IMDb gave it a 7.8 out of 10. Superman Homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. And the reviewer, Neil Bailey, has a quote here that I want to read that kind of exemplifies what we were just talking about, Nick, in our analysis. He says, Clark spends the end of this episode getting dumped on for trying to help people and losing the woman he loves to a scumbag in the name of idealism. I love it. Real life on television. What a bloody miracle. This is how it really happens, folks. Don't let the happy endings and romantic comedies lead you astray. This is truly life. Honesty and courage get you stepped on, but 'tis nobler. Sigh.
That was actually really good. Yeah, that's a really good analysis.
So, Nick, what did you think of Cool?
Cool was cool. I wouldn't say lukewarm or hot or anything like that. It was cool. I enjoyed it.
It was cool. there were a lot of those, you know, we didn't really mention it very much, but there was a lot of dialogue throughout the episode where people were talking about Sean saying he was cold or cool. Like, Pete at one point says, he's always been cool to me, which
was funny. Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I'm thinking about what I gave Hothead, I will probably give this one a B. The story was there, but I feel like this episode could have been cut and pasted to a different time. Like, it wasn't anything that's pushing the whole story. It wasn't as monumental as getting X-ray vision. It was just showing how the relationships are for all the characters. But overall, I'm going to give it a B because I don't want to, like you said last time, don't want to give it too high of a score because then all my scores are going to be high. But I really did enjoy this episode. Great dialogue. As we mentioned before, though, the whole Lex story wasn't – it could have easily been put somewhere else. If they had a little bit more to do with the actual relationships or everything like that, I think I would have given it a higher score.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same page as you. I'm going to give this a B-, actually. I enjoyed it a lot, but I felt like there's a lot of contrivances in there. Yeah. In the other episodes, like, all of the stories came together in various ways. Like, they dovetailed into each other. They connected. There was some thematic connection between them all. This episode, it was just, we need to put these characters in the place we need them to be at to wrap the story up. Or to have everyone involved, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, let's get everybody together at Luther Mansion at the end without much logical explanation.
And really, it didn't really do anything for the story.
Yeah, it didn't, because the characters, they never interact. They're all separated. Nobody even knows Clark's there, and his parents are searching around outside for no reason, and you got your stock villain. I think that's one of the weaker parts, you know, that, because it's just, like we said earlier, he's just the bad guy. He's not really a character, right? He has one character trait, and that is he goes after girls, which doesn't really change. It just gets a little more lethal when he becomes a freak of the week. This is a pretty Chloe-centric episode. I mean, she is the primary focus of the freak of the week this time. Usually it's Lana, so that's a nice change. And, you know, it more pushes her into main character status than auxiliary character status, because I feel like Pete never really gets an episode. Unfortunately, the only episode he really gets like this is the one with Amy Adams, where she is the fat vampire, fat sucking vampire. Well, she's fat. It's just, man.
Hey, they need a freak of a week. So whatever
that one's
they can
gonna
find.
Be hard to. I mean, that's seven episodes in. You had to go to fat sucking vampire seven episodes in. Come on. So Pete kind of plays the Chloe role this episode and that episode, because that's another freak of the week who like must kill or attack people to survive. Right. So it's actually, now I think about it, it's very similar to this one, just with the reverse, where it's a girl who has the problem and the male auxiliary character is the victim. You know, seriously, Pete focused episodes, they're very rare. The other one was Fast and the Furious episode. so but Chloe, on the other hand, as we're talking about here, she grows as the series progresses, and I think a lot of that has to do with Allison Mack as a great actress. Sam Jones is the third, but Allison Mack's a better actor than you are. Does a lot more with the material, and they have a lot more options with her based off, you know, what she does. I mean, she's being the newspaper person, she has her hand in a lot of stories, a lot of things in Smallville.
Yeah, and since it being the fifth episode, it really showed that Chloe is actually here to stay. Chloe is a character that everyone needs to know, and this is a really great way to set her up. Because in the first couple episodes, they make her seem like, oh, she's just going to complain all the time, doesn't like the jocks, is going to be paper focused. But then this episode really showed that, yeah, she has feelings for other people as well.
Possibly Clark.
Possibly Clark.
Laying the seeds there for what might happen later in the season in the series.
Yes.
It was a good episode for Clark and Lana. I feel like, and we're really starting to see why it's going beyond just Clark having a crush on this girl. You get to see they actually do have some chemistry together. They have some cool moments together. There is some reciprocation. So Clark's just not, you know, banging his head against a wall here. Like, there's something there. It's something worth him exploring, you know. Despite Lana saying they were just friends. So, speaking of the friend zone, did you have anything else to say? I know you had a lot to say about the friend zone earlier.
Well, for this episode, it was more we knew what was going to happen, but it did show the internal struggle, I guess, if you will, with Lana, because Lana obviously did start having, like, she started thinking about it. Like, she was like, what if this? And then when she said just friends and she's walking away and the music is playing, she looked upset.
Yeah, you kind of see she's not too, like, you know, confident in that, but she knows that some part of her knows that that's the best thing for them right now.
Yeah.
So B for you, B minus for me. Is that right, Nick?
Yes.
We have one final point we need to address here. The Bechdel test.
Oh.
Does this episode pass? And for those of you who don't know, the Bechdel test is, you know, I'm not sure when it was invented or who came up with it. Probably someone named Bechdel. I'll look that up for the next podcast. But basically, it's if in a work of fiction, two female characters have a conversation about something other than a man, and that is the Bechdel test. And this episode fails because the only dialogue exchanged between two women is between Martha and Lana, and Martha asks Lana, "Where's Clark?" So clearly about a man. Fail. Well, cool, Nick. Thanks for being on the show.
It was a pleasure. I don't have a pun, though.
So if people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me in two places, at Nick Ryan for Twitter, so NickRyan, and at NickRyan.jpg on Instagram.
And if you want to find me, I'm at MoreOnZach, MoreOnZach on Twitter, personally. And the show is at Always Smallville on Twitter. That's Always Smallville, 1S. Twitter has a character limit, and we're embracing that. So we're Always Smallville across the internet, where you can find us on Facebook at Always Smallville, or just search Always Hold On to Smallville. You can also send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. We have gotten some email on our email account. I just want to have a shout-out to Matthew and a shout-out to Richard. Do you know who you are? And I don't want to use your last names in case you want to have some sense of anonymity. Is that how you say it? Anonymity? Or anonymous?
You said it the right.
Anonymity, yes. It sounds like I'm saying you're wrong, but it's not. So, well, anyway, Matthew and Richard, thank you so much for email. Knowing people are out there listening and liking what we're doing makes it all worthwhile. So until next time, we'll be talking about Hourglass on our next episode. Our friend Mike Krause will be back. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
it's so